We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 312 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dean Hilton, and today we are making some Barcelona podcast history. While the audio may not be as good as it normally is on my fancy-dancy mixer, it's our very first in-person show, and joining me in his own home, I should say, I'm joining him, it's Mike Crimmins. Mike, how do you think it's going to go?
I don't know. This is my first time doing a YouTube video or being on camera, so I'll do my best, and it's great to meet you in person finally, so let's do this.
Yeah, for a long time, I was told that I've got a face for radio and a voice for, well, not even television, but yeah, we'll see how it goes between the camera and the microphone. But we, again, want to tell everyone, just head over to YouTube, check out that segment. It's probably going to be just a portion of this show, but for those who are always here every week, twice a week for all the audio, that's what you get here. And what we're going to start with today, Mike, is I think a quick topic. Our main topic is going to be Sergio Aguero today, and we're going to do some transfers at the end, some reason to hold on. But one of the reasons why you could have tuned off was that 1-1 draw against Boca Juniors in penalties in Saudi Arabia. And I do have some notes, but only because I host a podcast. If I didn't host a podcast, I don't think I would have thought about that match again.
Yeah, well, I didn't see the match, so I did tune out. I went skiing that day, so you can tell from that how much credence I put into that. You know, it's a friendly. A friendly is a friendly is a friendly, whether it's preseason or midseason. It's meaningless. It's a little sad, I think, that the club is so desperate for money these days. Yeah. I think this was simply a cash grab. Midweek, middle of the season, to go to Saudi Arabia, of all places, to make $3 million, which not so long ago would have been pocket change for Barcelona, but now is actually a significant amount of money that I think we wanted to take. So I didn't see the game. I heard Dani Alves looked okay.
Well, that's true. I think if we have talking points, it's actually on a player that culés know a lot about, and that's Dani Alves, who is clearly, in my eyes, the best player on the field, whether he was getting in central positions, whether he was pushing forward when the game was 1-1, or just being as the right back with a younger player in front of him and Sergiño Dest out of the way on the left wing. For Dani Alves to be the best player, it is kind of worrying, yes, because he's 37 years old and it's worrying, but it is a bright side too, because as we've said, maybe Barca's best starting 11 in the spring when they are fighting for top four, when it's time to potentially not even go far in the Copa del Rey, but try to do well in the Copa del Rey, and of course in the Europa League, how far can you go there? And to have Dani Alves be maybe part of that starting lineup, at least that friendly told me, okay, maybe he's still in shape. Maybe he's got something in comparison to some of the other players around him. And then I think the other player who really stood out was Ferran Jukla, the player who came from Barca B, from Espanyol B during the offseason, scored the goal, played on the right, and then switched to the middle, so showing some versatility. That's how you break into the first team, by playing more than one position. And I went and did a deep dive on his numbers. He has 4 goals and 4 assists in 15 matches so far for Barca B, which is pretty good. And then prior to, though, last season, 5 goals in 28 appearances with Espanyol B, 7 goals in 24 appearances the year before with a 20-year-old. So at 22, 23 in February, I don't know how much of a high ceiling he has.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
We're really at the point to say, hey, if you can just be useful off the bench for 6 months for Barcelona's first team, who knows where your career goes?
Yeah, it's a little concerning that, I mean, I saw the goal. I did see the highlights, and that was a nicely taken goal.
Yeah.
But if we're relying on sort of an Espanyol cast-off, at 22 years old, who hasn't broken through yet to play a significant role the rest of the way, I think we're in even more trouble than we thought. But, no, it'd be interesting to see him. I mean, watching him play in the middle, especially, you know, maybe we'll see him this week against Elche in that position. I know I probably speak for all coolies. We don't really want to see Luke DeJong there again this weekend. So, you know, if he's somebody that can give us minutes there and pin the center backs or just, you know, show good movement in there and open up space and maybe score a goal or two, you know, or the rest of the way, then maybe he can be useful. But I'm with you. I'm not sure how high his ceiling is.
Yeah, and against Boca Juniors, who were fighting, they were trying in that match. I don't think the level between Boca Juniors and Elche, if anything, Boca is actually the more difficult of the opponents. Again, no disrespect to Elche.
Yeah.
The stakes are a little different too, but I think if Juca can perform there, and again, he's been, sometimes he is Barca B's best player. He has been sometimes, again, coming off the right. And then just like everyone else, a young player, he's ineffective at times, but I mean, we talked about it with Abde not making the trip even. Yeah. Obviously, Abde would have started in this match, yeah. And I've already of the expectation that Abde would have been one of the most important players in that match. And then the question becomes, really for you, between Ricky Puig, who controlled things for better or worse. I don't know, when Ricky Puig is your main playmaker, your main guy, your main fulcrum point, as he was. I don't know what that says about the team one, but I think it says more about the fact that Coutinho, in Saudi Arabia, in this friendly like this, could not be the influential best player, could not be the playmaker. But actually, Dest is the one I'm most worried about. Playing on that left wing, I mean, is he best as a right back? Is he best as a right wing? Or was he making room for other players? I don't know. Why would you play him in a friendly up on the left wing? I think it's a death sentence, honestly, for Dest.
It seems like it to me. I mean, here we are. Actually, we just talked about how friendlies don't mean anything, and now we're going to read all this meaning into it. But I do kind of agree with you that, like, if Xavi doesn't have any confidence in Dest at right back, and it certainly seems like he doesn't. Although I guess, you know, Dest has had that back injury, so I'm kind of hoping that maybe some of his absence has to do with that. You know, but throwing him up there on the left wing, you know, I just don't think Xavi sees a space for him. I mean, this is just a makeshift lineup of a bunch of guys who haven't played together. And so I'm with you as a fan of the U.S. men's national team and as a fan of Sergino Dest. I'm not sure he's going to be around that much longer at Barcelona. Coutinho, I have a feeling Coutinho just felt like, you know, starting a friendly in Saudi Arabia with a bunch of kids and bench players was an insult to him. That's how he views it, I think. And maybe he just wasn't going to give his best in that match. So I didn't see the match, like I said, so maybe that's unfair. But Coutinho's that, you know, his mentality lately at Barca has been a guy with a chip on his shoulder in a bad way, and his head is down. And so I don't know. I can't read anything into his performance there.
You know, I mean, I've been criticized of being a bit too critical of Coutinho. I think that's the player I've given the most negativity to over the last few. I mean, rightfully so, justified.
Yeah,
this season's interesting because he should have already been gone.
Yeah.
I mean, that was what was best for the player. That was what was best for his career. But he's, for me, he's the epitome of a lame duck player at Barcelona. Yeah.
He's our Bale.
Exactly. So the reason you can't read into that, because he actually still might be a great player. It might exist, but it will never exist at that location. It just won't happen at Barcelona. It's not the fit. And so, again, I keep repeating every week with Coutinho, whether he plays in La Liga or whether he plays in Saudi Arabia, either way. And then the young players, too. Alexander Balde, who people have been asking for, Alejandro Balde, rather, and Alex Balde. The final third continues to be the issue. Mm-hmm. You could tell in that friendly why he doesn't get the first team minutes that I think people kind of are pining for. And it could happen, but I think he still needs to make that next step with Barca B. Clearly, he's one of, and when you watch Barca B, his physical tools allow him to be one of the most influential players, but now he just needs to make that next step. And then another
raw player. Yeah.
Right, very raw. And then it's still at 18, and then all of a sudden you're going to blink and he's 20. Now you got some worries. And then the other one playing, who actually played left back as Balde switched to the left wing, was Mika Marmol, who's made a lot of news on Barca Twitter, at least, for being a player that could be important. And this is the juncture where I'm really going to read into too much. The question I'm asking for Mika Marmol, he came in as left back and Mingaitha played as a left center back. So I don't know if that says more about Mika potentially making his first team debut as a left back, or is it about Mingaitha getting to play where he's most comfortable? If it's Mingaitha getting to play at center back because that's where he fits, well, I guess that makes sense. But if Xavi's actually saying, hey, Balde's not ready, Mika Marmol, maybe he could be a depth option at left back.
Yeah.
He's played at left back and left center back in the academy. He has been Barca B's best player. I think that is a general consensus, that he has been their most consistent, most important player for Sergi Barzouan this year at left center back. So, I mean, why not? I think we're getting to that point with him.
Yeah, I actually didn't realize he'd been playing left back. I always hear of him as a center back.
It's been about the last year or two when he's been a center back. He was a left back prior to.
I mean, with Alba's injury history, if he doesn't trust Balde yet, he doesn't seem to like Dest on the left, where I think Dest has been okay on the left and sometimes better than he's been on the right.
I think you're right.
He's tried Mingaitha on the left side. That doesn't work. So he's kind of out of options if we can't bring anybody in, which I'm sure we can't. We have other places we need to reinforce more than left back.
Well, I mean, I think wingbacks are just so expensive. Yeah. There's not even a January market for a wingback is not existent.
It will be interesting. I did see on Twitter today somebody had noted that the idea is for Mika Marmol to be more in the first team dynamics going forward. So maybe Xavi saw enough. You know, he's probably had him in mind, mm-hmm. and maybe he's seen enough to give him a chance the second half of the season. I mean, it probably also depends a bit on if Umtiti leaves or Longley leaves. I don't think that's going to happen. I wish Umtiti, we could find an exit for him in January. Mm-hmm. It's like you were saying with Coutinho. I think it would be best for everybody involved if Coutinho moved on in January.
Right.
But I'm just unconvinced there's going to be a market for him, number one. And number two, whether he'll agree to go or take a wage cut or do the things he needs to do to restart his career. And I think Umtiti's kind of in the same boat.
Well, a big reminder, too. We'll get to it. I don't want to ruin the transfer segment yet, but it is a big reminder with Coutinho and Umtiti trying to move them on that they have to fit into the other team's salary structure for the 21-22 season. Yeah. That's why it's obviously a lot easier to move players in the summertime. Yeah, there's preseason, all that stuff, but just financially, even from a club's perspective, January transfer moves are difficult because you have to refit into that salary structure, depending on the league, too. So Premier League is whatever. You just throw into the Premier League and they'll keep pushing that cap up.
And Barcelona would be, I mean, obviously this isn't ideal, but we'd be better off paying part of Coutinho's and Umtiti's salary while they're playing somewhere else.
Possibly.
And paying all of their salary to have them sit on the bench and make frankly, meaningless appearances or detrimental appearances for the club every once a month or something, you know. So, I think it would be best, you know, in this whole reboot of the team, to get both of those players out as soon as possible, even if it means paying half their salary or 40% of their salary for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and I think the final player from the friendly that should be brought up was Ilacha Comas, who is, again, he's had potential for a long time. Well, not a long time, but 2-3 years. If you're 17, long time is 2-3 years, I guess, in his time. But at 17, he shows that he can beat a man. He has a skill. He can do that. But it's putting all that together. He is so, so raw, just like Balde.
Yeah.
Where, again, he's 17. We'll check in on him in a year or two. But he still could be making first-team appearances. But once again, with a young player like him, I don't want to read too much into it. It's not like a Gabi or Nico or Pedri. We're like, okay, this guy's going to be around the peripheral. Abde's the one who kind of made the jump. He is going to be 20 tomorrow, actually. So I guess at 20, you're also splitting hairs because some guys are late bloomers, right? So Abde at 19 might be where Dukla is at 23 or whatever it may be. But, I do want to close the book on that. We'll
hit I do want to mention just Ilyash and you know Balde, I think are similar in that not everybody, like you said, is an Ansu or a Pedri or a Gabi. We're incredibly lucky to have four guys who have made that jump at such a young age. But you know, you can also ruin players by rushing them too much and sort of blowing their confidence and not having them on that developmental path that they need to be on individually. And everybody has their timeline, everybody has their path. So I hope that those guys will get time. I still think they both have tremendous potential. But number one, they shouldn't be rushing. Number two, they shouldn't be giving up on you too early.
So. Well, yeah, I say I'm blue in the face that progress is not linear. Yeah. That certainly injury setbacks affect those things, certainly. I mean, Ilyash also with his red cards this year, he's actually missing starts and stops. And Ilyash, too, has played with the first team, Barca B, and Juvenil Oz. Mm-hmm. And as Conrad De La Fuente, actually, another U.S. men's national team player, kind of reminded us that if you were jumping and not knowing where you're going to be, who you're going to be playing with from weekend to weekend, it's cool to debut for the first team. These are big experiences. Like, can you make the most of that appearances? But sometimes that start and stop with these young careers can be detrimental in a year, even if it's beneficial in the long term. So again, there are players who put a pin in, and then there are ones like Marmol where you go, okay, I think that one for him might have been a bit of a tryout for the first team. But unfortunately, speaking of the first team players in and out, the saddest way to go out is through a forced retirement through injury. And at this point, I think it's time to talk about Sergio Aguero.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So speaking of Sergio Aguero, 33 years old, retires after 18 years at the top flight, one goal in five appearances for Barcelona. He does it in El Clasico. It was a bit odd watching that press conference at Barcelona, because obviously it just should have been at Man City, as if he had signed for six more months. But obviously you don't know what happens there. He could have scored 10 to 15, 20 goals for Barcelona, who knows, this year. Well, 20 is a bit much, but he could have scored 10 to 15 this year with how desperate Barca were for anyone to play the number nine with Fati out. It's possible, but the question that I think we're asking, and Barcelev, one of the other co-hosts, did bring this up to me on Twitter. I didn't respond to him on Twitter, unfairly, Levon, who's probably listening. He fairly questioned when I said that Aguero was in the pantheon of Zlatan and Rooney and Ronaldo and Messi. And that really did get me thinking, though, about Aguero and his legacy, right? He obviously is not a legend for Barcelona. He played five appearances. But as a player in total, because we really just focus on Barcelona, do you think Aguero doesn't get enough credit, or do you think he's perfectly aligned to where he is when we speak about him as a player?
Well, he's certainly not overrated, so we can eliminate that possibility.
Right. I mean, well, unless I say that he's in the pantheon of Zlatan and Ronaldo Messi, does that overrate him?
I mean, I think he's either right there or just a slight notch below. I mean, he's the all-time, if I'm correct, he's the all-time non-English scorer, goal scorer in Premier League history. And frankly, he has the most memorable goal for me of a non-Barcelona goal.
No, you know? I mean, I think that goal is the most important goal in EPL history.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, against QPR. We're talking about the 2012 Man City. And you know what's funny? Aguero was 23 when he scored that goal. That's what's incredible, because he felt like he was a veteran at that time.
Well, if he was 23, I mean, he had already scored 100 goals for Atletico before.
Exactly.
I mean, put it in those terms, the guy scored 100 goals for Atletico before the age of 23. Goes on to Man City, becomes Man City's all-time leading scorer, I believe, right?
260 goals for Man City in almost 400 games, 184 of them coming to Premier League, 38 goals for Independiente as a teenager, debuting at 15 years old, also 40 for Argentina, being 100 cap man, 101 to be exact, and you were right, 100 exactly for Atletico Madrid in 230 appearances. So, and I think bringing up Argentina is a good point, because I think Argentina is where he loses that credibility. It's where he doesn't, because he didn't help Messi the way that he was always supposed to. And I think that hurts his legacy. I also think playing at Man City certainly hurts his legacy, because as he was making his way at Man City also were, you know, they were buying their success. So we don't have to, you know, we could say that in that way. So I think not having the brand of Man City, also playing the EPL as a non-English speaker, really did hurt his marketability. Because if he was on every billboard in Manchester, if he was on every billboard in London, I think we were talking about it entirely, but he gave interviews in English, which he does not usually.
Right.
And then, then again, the Argentina stuff.
But on the other side, if you're familiar with his personality in Spanish, I mean, he's one of the all-time likable guys. So that moves him up ahead of guys like Zlatan and Ronaldo, too. You know?
Well, he's coming for me. He's coming for us. Like, the minute he learns English, like, this is a wrap.
No, he's an all-time, I mean, he's an all-time great player, all-time great guy. Like I said, that goal against QPR in 2012 that clinched the Premier League is, for neutrals, I think that might be the best goal ever scored, you know, for if you're just watching as a neutral. Like you said, at the end of the day, he's a Man City legend. He's a Premier League legend. He's not a Barca legend. He's barely even a Barca player. No one will ever associate him with Barca. So it was a little weird watching him at Camp Nou getting, you know, I mean, I'm glad the club stepped up and gave him a nice send-off if that's what he wanted. But it's kind of weird, especially juxtaposed to how the greatest player of all time and Barca's greatest legend left over the summer. But, you know, Aguero's, I wish him well. He's, like I said, he's an all-timer and an all-time great guy.
Yeah, I do have some more stats for you here, even. He has the best minutes per goal ratio of any player with at least 10 goals in EPL. He scored every 108 minutes. And if Barca had a player scored every 108 minutes that wasn't named Messi or Suarez, that's one of the revolving doors, too. I mean, if he takes... I mean, there are certain moments in Aguero's career, like looking back, where maybe he could have done even more than he did, where his relationship with Guardiola, where if he comes in and says, I'm the alpha here, I know you bought Gabriel Jesus, but either I start like I'm supposed to because I'm Sergio Aguero, or you ship me off. And he goes to, you know, Inter or Juventus, or I think at that juncture he wouldn't have come to Barca because of Suarez, even with Suarez declining. But yeah, I mean, if he had decided to be the guy and said, I'm the guy, Jesus has to sit on the bench and push Guardiola, I wonder how that ends. And I wonder where he goes after that, if he's transferred out. And then part two of that is, what if he had come instead of Suarez? Is like the real, real big one.
That's what I was going to say. And if the sliding doors moment is earlier in time, he leaves Atletico.
For sure.
Instead of going to Man City, he comes to Barcelona and plays with Messi. Suarez never comes in that instance, but you know, who knows where that goes. And you know, that's an interesting thing to contemplate as well.
Because don't take anything away from Suarez in that equation. Like, for Aguero to have been what Suarez was, you'd have to be the third all-time winning goal scorer at FC Barcelona. You had been the highest scoring trident of an attacking trio in history, and you would have had to win a treble.
Yeah.
You would also had to not defend for the last 2 years when you were at the club and not press very often. But Aguero also doesn't press very much either. Aguero hasn't pressed for almost 4 years. I mean, and that is why Guardiola kind of told him to accept the role as kind of a bench player, and last year was kind of a lost year because he was injured. But yeah, 33, you feel like he did have a little more to give, but his legacy is still pretty good. And it's I think the tough thing then too is to figure out where he fits. I agree. And, you know, with both Levan pushing, and as you've said too, that no, he's not Zlatan, he's not Messi, no one is Messi and Ronaldo, but he's not Zlatan even. I don't think he's in that. I don't even think he's Didier Drogba. But he's certainly above Lukaku, as we continue to make these lists, right? He's way above Immobile. He is the step down for Lewandowski. And they're actually almost a similar age. But he is definitely, was never at his point, a Lewandowski.
Right.
The Lewandowski, actually, even at Dortmund, maybe a little bit slow to being that national thing. I mean, the international icon, because he's Polish and plays for Dortmund. I think it actually hurts Lewandowski in that order.
Yeah.
But so where do we put Aguero? Do we put him with Diego Forlan? But he seems better than him. And I just... Right, every name I say,
it's all situational, right? Because you have guys like Lewandowski. Lewandowski's a great player, but he plays in the perfect team for him.
Of course.
And you put Aguero in that team, I don't know, maybe he scores a lot more goals than he scored for Man City. Man City is spreading goals around.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Comparing players like this, for me, Messi's on top and everybody else is just in a jumble. So
for sure.
But you know, and again, like Aguero, I mean, For me, he's always going to be one of the best because I think of him of his personality as well.
Sure,
and I just always enjoyed him as a player. I mean, was exposed to him I think a lot more because Messi was friends with him. So as a Barcelona and a Messi fan, you sort of get exposed to Aguero more than I would have some other random Man City player, right? And I follow Argentina, for example. So I feel like I've had a relationship with Aguero for a long, long time, even since he was at Atletico.
Well, even Atleti, Diego Simeone, the Argentine, gets all the credit for it. But if you don't have Aguero, I mean, and Fernando Torres also did the whole part of it. Actually, yeah. I think I finally got there. I worked my way around. I workshopped it. I think Fernando Torres is actually the answer. Because if you're talking Spain in this generation, right, you're talking David Villa, not Fernando Torres. Yeah, Fernando Torres scored big goals, played for big clubs, had huge years. And I think that's exactly where Sergio Aguero belongs, as almost like contemporary, where you can, I mean, I'm a numbers guy. I mean, his numbers are just, you can't compete with, right? He didn't score the same goals that Henri did, but he also did. He scored 5 goals in one game. He scored more hat tricks than Alan Shearer.
I think he has more hat tricks than anyone in Premier League.
In Premier League history, yeah. He beat Alan Shearer's 11. Yeah. He has 12. So the numbers tell you that Aguero, this guy puts the ball in the back of the net like almost anybody else, but he didn't do it the way Thierry Henry did it, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I love Thierry Henry, because he did it the way Thierry Henry did it. And so I think, in all those instances where even Eric Cantona, where you talk about him for Manchester United, and whether it was the trophies or even kicking somebody, it's just on the field, it wound up being so much more. And Aguero was just kind of, he was a messy light in terms of even his personality on the field, where, you know, he barked a little bit, but he wasn't, he never got in enough trouble, but he also was always bickering a little bit, right? He always had a little bit
always had a little personality.
Yeah, a little bit of edge to him. So, I mean, we're going to have to say goodbye to Aguero, unfortunately. And I think the last, you know, how we wrap up the Aguero segment is saying, what does that mean for Barca?
Yeah.
Well, that means a registration spot in January, and that means some salary, as you would mention, that his salary is probably going to be pretty much paid for through insurance.
Yeah, it's interesting with Aguero, and I think this is part part of just who he is and his legacy. You know, there are three possibilities for Barca at this point, or Aguero with Barca. He could have, and he was certainly well within his rights to see how this went, right? Maybe in a month or two, maybe he gets a different diagnosis or things look different. He could have stayed throughout the year. He could have collected his salary, you know, and while sitting in the stands, right? Mm-hmm. He could have retired like he did, and Barca gets back. I think it's been reported that he's given up next year's part of his salary completely.
Yes.
And then this year is going to be some reduced amount, probably a settlement, probably paid by insurance. Mm-hmm. And then the third possibility, of course, was he gets healthy and he comes back and he scores 12 right. goals for Barca the rest of the way in a resurgent Barca's fight for the top four. I just think we all knew that that was a very unlikely scenario, even before the heart issue. I mean, for myself, I never quite like embraced Aguero as a Barcelona player as much as I love him, because I just never expected, after his injury riddled season last year and coming in injured this year and sort of barely getting back on the field, that he was going to stay healthy and produce goals for us.
I also think there's something to the fact that he came to play with Messi, and once Messi left, that did kind of put a dark cloud on Aguero's existence of being there.
Yeah.
Where the guy you came to play with is not here. Your friend, one of your best friends is right. not here, not around to play with.
I think Aguero was leaving in the summer, even under the best of circumstances. So not to be crass about it, but like, you know, it's actually a good thing for Barcelona that he retired, as opposed to what the other likely scenario is, which is just sits around and collects salary, you know, a la Gareth Bale or other players that we've seen.
Or Barca players, actually.
Yeah.
Some Barca players in the past.
Yeah,
or least, current, yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, some of those guys they're not even in the stands, they're on the bench, but they're offering just about as much. But anyway, I also think that reflects well on Sergio Aguero, that he's always had integrity, he's always been a stand-up guy, and I think he's not the kind of guy who's going to just sit back and just collect money.
Yeah, I mean, and he's not going anywhere. I mean, he's going to be involved in television, he's going to be involved, I mean, the move in theory back to Spain, getting involved in their media once again, I mean, his Twitch stream is the stream to be on. I mean, that and PK. Those two, I mean, so he'll continue on. I don't think he'll have an affiliation with Barca per se, but he will be a figure for a while, like in media, and it'll be cool to see. So yeah, we say goodbye to a legend of the game, if not a legend of FC Barcelona, just unfortunately a footnote. But yeah, I mean, the one going on Clásico, we can look back and, well, it was not a big win or anything. It was the one who we scored for Barca. But speaking of number nines, speaking of forwards, speaking of transfers, potentially, yes, Aguero leaving and freeing up some salary is going to be helpful for registering players in January. And I mean, there's so many names on both of our notes in front of us that we have that we could throw out that have been on Twitter in the last 2-3 weeks. And it just like when the groundhog comes out and there's 6 more weeks of winter, well, it's about January time. So it means that there's 2 more weeks of January transfer stuff. But I think you and I were speaking in a very mature way about it. It comes down to how much money Barca has to spend on transfers, but actually more importantly, and if you listen to Tebas, who always seems to give his interviews like an evil Bond villain, when you listen to him and hear him, there's a bit more, I think, that it's a bit cynical from Tebas, and I think the truth is somewhere in the middle, that Barca may be able to get some things done and get players registered and get salary all set and go, but how much is that? Like, we know that Dani Alves has taken almost nothing and really helped out the club. But how many other players can actually come in and fit under that limit, especially if no players go out? Because if no players go out, then nothing gets done.
It's going to be super challenging. First of all, on Tebas, it's incredibly unprofessional for Tebas to be talking about what teams within the league can do or can't do in the press.
Afford other players in other leagues.
Yeah, it makes no sense whatsoever.
It's not.
He's interfering with our negotiations. I just don't get that at all, but he's who he is. It's going to be very difficult in January because, as we've discussed before, when Laporta came in, he stuffed a lot of expenses and a lot of debt into this year, partially, I think, to make Bartomeu look bad. You know, he wants to start from the lowest possible point and the worst possible point so that, you know, when things do recover, he can claim victory. But I think also to kind of wipe the slate clean a little bit. So this year, I think we have very little room to maneuver, whereas I think in the summer, you're going to see that salary limit, which I think is like $97 million or something right now, jump way back up.
Down from, what was it, 253 or something like that?
I think it was even higher.
Like 300 and something, yeah.
So, that said, I do think, and we were talking about this a little bit off air, I do think that there's some maneuverability here in January, especially now that we have Aguero's not only his slot back, but a few million dollars in salary room to work with. I think we'll probably move Luke de Jong out somehow. I know that's not a lot of money, but that'll give us a little bit of more room. And I do think we'll be able to bring in someone like Ferran Torres, and that's what I'm really hoping for. And the reason I think that that he's the one is because I think he wants to come badly enough. Mm-hmm. I think he wants to come back to Spain badly enough that he'll figure out a way to make it work. And that might mean playing on a very low salary for the rest of this year and then getting something more
backloaded. Yeah.
Yeah. Backloaded and back up to more of his market value next year and in the future years of his contract. I do think we can afford the transfer fee. I think Man City is a team, luckily, that we have a relationship with that mm-hmm. we can work with. So I think we can get payments spaced out just from a cash flow perspective. Obviously, we'll be able to amortize the cost of whatever the transfer fee is over the length of the contract, which I expect would be long, probably 5 years.
Yeah, it's usually standard.
And I just think there's enough there with Torres that I think that one will happen. The other obvious possibility is, Dembele might be on his way out. That's a super complicated situation, right?
But
with his contract expiring in January, it's very difficult, I think, to make the calculation that Laporta has to make, which is, and Xavi, I'm sure we'll have some saying this as well, is we need to make top four. Like, I'm not even sure, like, all colleagues understand just how desperate it is that we need to make top four. Mm-hmm. Not only from the financial, just the straight finances of the money you get from being in the Champions League, but we will not recruit any players this summer. Nobody's going to come. No top players are going to come play for, there's been talk of Haaland this week. Any chance we have of getting Haaland, no matter how slim, goes to zero if we're not in the Champions League next year. So we may need Dembele to get there, but we also don't want to lose him for free. So I think putting everything together, if there's an offer for him in January, and one that he's willing to take, I think that we have to let him go in January, which obviously would open up a lot of salary space to make some moves in January.
Yeah, I mean, there are other players too. We talk about free transfers even next year where mm-hmm. – Haaland, unfortunately, dominates so much of the news. I know he's a Mino Raiola client, and obviously Laporte has a relationship with him. They had lunch this week or whatever, and they're also saying that this summer, too, those agent commission fees, they're really going to try to crack down on those, and that is going to be a big part of Haaland's deal. Mm-hmm. And if it's not because Raiola is going to get less of a cut, that's going to be interesting to see how that whole transfer saga pays out. And you're trying to put him and Mbappe on one team, but we know that Mbappe is going to Real Madrid. That is almost as done as anything that we've seen. Now, on the other side of that, though, speaking of Luke de Jong, mm-hmm. the one that seems to be catching the most fire, the rumor at least, is that an Alexis Sanchez-Luke de Jong swap is almost completed. Mm-hmm. And where that worries me is you say Ferran Torres to me. Mm-hmm. And then I'm looking and I say, well, it seems the one with the rumor with the most credence is the one that says that a 33-year-old, well, he turns 33 this week, mm-hmm. Alexis Sanchez, who has one goal and four appearances this year, is potentially coming to Barcelona, and he's who Barcelona's going to get to reinforce in January. So, I mean, that is what worries me. I mean, even Alexis Sanchez, how much more can he give? The good news is, here's silver lining, is that he is a center forward now. And we remember him as a winger, playing, obviously, next to and both wings. He could play left and right, but he basically has been a center forward as injuries have piled up, and he's aged as well for Manchester United and Inter, where it had never really worked out.
Yeah.
And I mean, can he give you five goals? That's what you're asking for. But I'll keep going back to it. As much as we talk about January transfers, Pedri and Fati coming back are more important than, I mean, maybe even more important than Ferran Torres coming in, because Ferran Torres, I don't expect him to get 15 goals for you. I would hope that he could get somewhere between 10 and 12, maybe. Mm-hmm. But if Fati can be 90% of Fati from January to May, he can score 20 goals.
Yeah.
I'll guarantee that.
These are just big ifs, right? We haven't had Ansu for five straight months ever. So
yeah. Well, is it a bigger if to say a player that isn't at Barca comes to Barca, or a player that's at Barcelona now?
I don't know.
Who's supposed to come back next week is going to come back.
I'm not sure. Given Dembele's in the same boat. Like, if Dembele is healthy, if Pedri is healthy, if Ansu is healthy, if Braithwaite comes back, if all these things happen, I think things will come together and we'll make top four.
Yeah.
Even without any transfers in or transfers out. But, those are all a lot of big ifs. And I would rather have some insurance with another player like Ferran Torres. On Alexis Sanchez, I mean, we read the same sources and the same, mm-hmm. On all these transfer rumors. We have to sift through what's credible and what's not credible. And I think, so it's interesting. I think you and I have come to different conclusions in reading the same things. Because I think the Alexis Sanchez one sounds a lot more like agent baiting, right? Where the agent for Alexis Sanchez is trying to get his name out there. And, Barca wants him. So maybe he can figure out some deal for him.
That's fair.
Whereas in the Ferran Torres thing, I just think there's enough there with, he's Spanish. It does seem like he wants to come to Barcelona. He's the kind of player I think we need right now.
Guardiola's comments is the one thing for me on Ferran Torres that I had to double take, because Guardiola does not speak about a player that's leaving. Like, he's pretty open about that. He's always pretty like, oh, well, wherever he plays, he'll play. Mm-hmm. But he's like, well, he's your player right now. And the way he kind of said that was ominous enough that Guardiola is only ominous when a player's leaving.
Yeah.
And so whether that's the summer or the January window.
Yeah. I think it'll happen in January if Barcelona can make it happen within La Liga rules.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that'll happen. The other one is Cavani, which I think that's the only other one I think I put much credibility into as a possible January move. He's out of contract this summer. His role has changed completely with Ronaldo United. I think he wants to get out, and I think he would be a good fit as a stopgap. I'd certainly rather have, if we're going to bring in an old center forward, I'd much rather have Cavani than Alexis Sanchez.
Well, for certain. I mean, one is playing, I mean, even for Uruguay still, and one is, I mean, Alexis Sanchez makes appearances for Chile, but not really. I mean, and if you're speaking about a guy's international career as what can we look at from there, then you know that they're not the right move. They're not informed. They're not the player to kind of grab.
Right.
But what we do know is, I think, as we've spoken about before, whether it was over the summertime even, whether it was Donny van de Beek or Wijnaldum, the names that you knew over the summertime is that Koeman wanted some kind of box-to-box eight who could score a few goals and would be a bit physical, if you will. And that's who Barcelona needed at the time. Or you'll see over the summer when you saw that Gaia was, or when Dest transferred in, you saw a bunch of names in the weeks prior to in that summer, a bunch of wingbacks being thrown around with their names. The only players seemingly linked with FC Barcelona right now are center forwards, whether that is for the summertime or now. And this one's as clear as day, and I think it's going to actually hurt Barcelona a little bit in these negotiations, where if it takes any amount of money to get some of these players out of their clubs, the clubs might even try to hold the line, even if those players are leaving for free.
Yeah.
Which is as silly as it sounds. They might say, hey, you know, we would normally give you Cavani for six, but even though he's a free, we might need him. We might need him. And you're Barcelona, and you need a center forward right now. Yeah. Desperately need a center forward right now.
Yeah, our situation and the sort of public nature of our collapse financially does not help in negotiations. We look like a desperate club, and the last thing you want to be at a negotiating table is desperate.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I agree. It's difficult.
It's weird too, because we come in it from the Barca lens, and as much as top four, you're right, is cataclysmic, and now you're scaring me in person instead of usually on email or phone, but as cataclysmic as the top four situation is, for FC Barcelona to not only attract transfers, but just looking ahead to what we know this team can be capable of with all the teenagers, all the young talent, with Xavi, and as I said, I continue to trust in his tactics. I think he's going to have to figure new things out in the Liga. A Liga is just a different league, and his team, he has never coached, because he's only coached Al Saad. He's never coached the inferior team. Mm-hmm. And Barcelona is, I mean, on Tuesday, they're going to be inferior to Sevilla. Mm-hmm. Sevilla is a better team than Barcelona at the moment, right now.
Yeah.
Young talent-wise, it's not close. Barcelona's easily, the five-year plan is beyond what Sevilla could throw out right now. But yeah, I mean, for Barcelona fans and culés, you know that the future is bright in paper, like on paper, in theory, it is bright. But unfortunately, so many culés as well are reading those reactions, right? Mm-hmm. As in, there's always surprise when Barcelona loses to Bayern Munich. No culé who watches FC Barcelona every week were surprised in the least that it was 3-0. I mean, that was or 3-1, or 4-1, rather, or whatever the number was. But the 3-0. The other Bayern Munich loss, no one's surprised by that happening. Mm-hmm. If Barcelona loses Sevilla 3-1 or 2-0, I think 2-0 is a fair prediction against Sevilla at the juncture where they're also hot and cold, where you saw what they did in the Copa del Rey.
Yeah.
They barely got through the first two rounds.
And they did not look good in the Champions League.
And they looked terrible in Champions League.
They had a very winnable group there. So I don't know. I guess I'm not quite as pessimistic as you maybe against Sevilla. I think I'm hoping for a draw in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's possible. I'm actually really hoping that we can just get a little bit of momentum here before Christmas. And then we have Mallorca as the last game of the first half of the season, right after the break, even though it's the 19th game.
And I'm
actually going to be optimistic and hope for 7 points out of those three games. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, Sevilla's a draw. As I said, they're in bad form, and it would be. I mean, I think I am being a little bit overt pessimistic to say that Sevilla is better right now in theory than Barcelona. But you're right, Sevilla is not great. And if you're a Sevilla fan, you're actually worried about Barca coming to town.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the final point I want to make about even the transfers, where these Holland transfers are being thrown out on. I never want to throw them under the bus, but I always say the ESPN FCs or the huge, like Marca or Ass or whoever it may be. These are international places where these transfers are being thrown about because that's what gets clicks mm-hmm. from non-Kule supporters. And yeah. so Barcelona's demise, even in results right now, can, from the international perspective or from the, whatever, the national media, seems even worse than it is.
Yeah.
Where you look on the field and there are things that can happen. But as you said, that prophecy that Barcelona is in complete shambles or whatever, on the field at least, it will at least come to fruition if Barca don't get top four.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a worrisome thing, that I don't want to prove them right when they say Barcelona are way, way off it. Like, we know they're way, way off it, right. but also Ansu Fati isn't playing, Pedri isn't playing. They never bring up those things. Like, those things are true. Those things exist. Yeah. Injuries are not an excuse. Injuries are reality.
Yeah.
That's what Xavi has to deal with.
And we have had an unbelievable run of injuries. I mean, obviously there's been a lot of speculation about what the reasons are for that, but whatever they are, we've been incredibly unlucky with injuries. But you and I have talked about this offline. You know, we've been communicating about this for a year or so. I do think the situation is not good, mm-hmm. but it's not as bad as I think the most media make it out to be. And I think that's partially because Laporta wanted to make it look really bad.
Yeah. Well, I'll ask you, though. I've been talking the last two shows. Is this rock bottom? Is finally Barcelona is if we hit the tip of, I mean, the bottom of the valley?
I think it's rock bottom when we get knocked out by Napoli in the Europa League.
But is it, though? Because then the focus all is on top four.
I don't know. If we don't make top four, that's rock bottom.
That's rock bottom.
Like,
fair.
I mean, this year, you know, like I said, I don't think the financial situation is as bad as it's made out to be. But right now, this year, we are very, very constrained financially. So maybe we'll get Ferran Torres. That would be incredible. But there's no real cavalry coming in January, unless, you know, like you said, Ansu and Pedri and everybody gets back healthy. But we just need to make top four. And if we make top four, I think the financial stuff is gonna be okay.
Yeah.
I think it's gonna be okay. We're gonna get a new shirt sponsor coming up. We'll get people back in the stadium, you know, crowds will, the gate is so important for Barcelona.
Yeah, we did a little bit the other day.
Something like the museum is so important for Barcelona revenue. It's crazy,
I think it's 8% of total revenue.
Yeah.
And that's so much. You understand that.
It's an enormous amount, yeah. So, I mean, I think things are going to be okay. I really do. Even to the point of, and I know this may sound absurd to a lot of people, that I think Haaland could be in play this summer. A lot depends on where he wants to go, right? He's going to go where he wants to go.
Sure.
But we have a couple things going for us. And I think number one is the relationship that Mino Raiola and Laporta have. I don't think Mino Raiola has a lot of friends, but Laporta is one of them.
Yeah.
And they legitimately have a good relationship. And I don't think he has a good relationship with a lot of clubs. You may remember last time I was on the pod, which was maybe 7 or 8 months ago, I had laid out sort of my theory about Real Madrid being our nemesis, not our enemy, you know.
Right.
My dream scenario was they get Mbappe. I actually wanted them to get Mbappe, and I want us to get Haaland, and we set up the Ronaldo Messi, you know.
Right. Duopoly.
For the next decade. I think that a lot's happened since then. Right?
Yeah.
But I think that possibility still exists.
Well, you do hear rumors that players still want to play for Barcelona. I mean, and again, anyone who's been to Barcelona understands one of the reasons off the field why you want to live in Barcelona. But part of that too is that even if Barcelona in this downspell or whatever you want to call it, FC Barcelona, because if anything, Real Madrid can never stand alone. We're at a juncture because of Messi. And I mean, you could argue for the 100 years before Messi was the case. I'm not sure. But because of Messi, and as long as Messi is still remembered by a lot of people, which will be 20, 30, 40 years, mm-hmm. Barcelona will exist as a big club.
Yeah.
And I think it's a stupid term. I'm using quotes, and I get to use quotes in person, but it's a big term, but I mean, it's a stupid term, but big club, that is what Barca is, and that will still attract players matter what.
I hope that's true. I think that luster could, I think that's true right now, and will be true for a year or two or three.
Right.
But I mean, that luster could wear off.
We could
become, you know, AC Milan. I mean, talking about big clubs, I mean, Leeds was a big club, you know, 30 years ago. Valencia was one of the biggest clubs in Europe, you know, 30 years ago. So, you know, things do change. I mean, it's not inevitable that Barcelona stays on top.
But I don't know, who cares about history but me? But I mean, like Manchester United, no matter what, they can never fall above a certain threshold of always being connected to players. No matter, or even Arsenal. I mean, the way Arsenal's still spoken about, you're going to need another 10 years of Arsenal being Arsenal.
Arsenal and Spurs are a little silly. But they just benefit from being in the Premier League. I mean, they have loads of cash. I mean, Barcelona has money only insofar as they are a big club, and they will be a big club only insofar as they have money. So right. we could be at this inflection point, right, with Messi gone and, you know, things are, if we miss out on top four and we're out of the Champions League for a couple years, I mean, then, you know, revenue goes way down. You know, the millions of Barcelona fans around the world who maybe were really more Messi fans than Barcelona fans.
Yep.
Maybe they find a new club. You know, they sort of drift away. You know, you and I will still be here talking about it. But, you know, will we still have that sort of worldwide reach, or will things just diminish? Once you get on that downward trajectory, I think it's very hard to turn it back around.
Well, I mean, even the relationship between the Liga and the Spanish FA is something we have to keep looking at. Like, we talk about Tebas, but he also has to be reelected as well. And it's not just him, it's all those people involved behind the scenes in La Liga. I think La Liga, I mean, they need to do, I mean, even if the gooster comes to roost, like, they need to make sure that they're promoting and actually caring about the best interests of their clubs. So there's going to come a juncture where, but I don't know, because in the Bundesliga, not to say that all the clubs agree, but again, the clubs themselves kind of agree that Bayern Munich wins the league, as opposed to in La Liga, where, no, not everyone is happy if Real Madrid wins the next five La Ligas. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be good for La Liga and Spain if you know, Tebas is looking out over his kingdom and he has Real Madrid, you know, right next to him in an ivory tower, and then he has all those distressed assets between Valencia and the Peter, you know, if you think that Barcelona has issues like with Peter Lim, and there's just, La Liga is, I think they are at an inflection point as much as Barca is.
I agree.
And Barca is actually a reflection of how Spain dealt with the pandemic, how they're currently dealing with the pandemic. And there's just so many bigger things at work, as I always try to remind us at the Barcelona podcast. We're all about FC Barcelona, mm-hmm. but there's issues in a lot of different places. And the Liga would be wise to make sure that not just Barca, but Barca, Valencia, mm-hmm. Athletic Club, Atletico Madrid. You basically have your Real Sociedad, Real Betis, Sevilla. I don't want to leave anybody out. You have like seven clubs plus. You got to keep them in the Liga. Yeah. You have to keep them in the top, you know, in at least in the top 12 every year. You've got to make sure that they're selling tickets and they're putting butts in seats and doing things like that. But all right, Mike, I think we could go on about the greater part of the club, but unfortunately I do have these one or two times a week, so I need other stuff to talk about. But this is so much fun to do in person. Again, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, at the Barcelona Pod, close Facebook group, all that. And then Mike is a patron, so while I cannot, and I promise my other patrons, I will not be at your house bothering you like I did Mike. However, it was great to be here with Mike, and again, him being a patron is what started our relationship to be able to get all the way here and to do this kind of thing. So this was awesome. And then on YouTube too, at the Barcelona Podcast. But most importantly, thanks so much for listening to the show. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barca.
Forza Barca.